still.
I still think it's weird that you smoke weed with our half-cousin when you barely talk to our full-cousins, Elaine said. I thought all the aunties hated that side. Aren't we forbidden to talk to our half-aunt? Christine shrugged. Family feuds are for boomers. That stuff is so not conducive to what the rave movement is about anyways. Besides, I think Matt is talking to the aunties again after the funeral. Also, our other cousins are pretentious as shit and think they're better than us. Why would I even want to talk to them anyways? You know what? You're right. They love to pretend they're not Vietnamese, Elaine agreed, ready to talk shit about her cousins at any hour. Fucking Tao won't even respond back to my text about helping me find a woman for the arranged. The back room door suddenly burst open, and in walked a furious Jacqueline Ho. Her heels angrily clacked against the cement floor. One wrong move from her, and her bikini bottom that precariously covered her bits would have been prone to a wardrobe malfunction. Jacqueline's sleeve tattoos blurred together under the cackling fluorescent light, and she raised an angry finger and jabbed at Elaine's direction. Old man Chu needs to go, or I go, Jacqueline declared. She was covered in coffee stains. He threw iced coffee at me because he wanted my nipples to get hard. How many times is he going to keep doing this to me? Until the man keels over in his own urine or chokes on a boba? Why do you keep allowing him to come back here? It's demoralizing. Christine looked up from her phone and flashed Elaine a look. I told you so, Elaine. The man has no respect for any of these women. He just crawls in here expecting to be transported back to wartime Vietnam, expecting women to do whatever the hell he wants. It's gross as shit. Oh, Jesus Christ, Elaine muttered, her headache near splitting now. Jacqueline's shrill voice pierced her ear. Sorry, girl, I'll take care of it. Just another Monday morning, right? You said that last Monday morning, Elaine. This isn't a goddamn strip club, and we are not making small talk at the office water cooler. I don't exactly do this shit for fun. I do it to pay for law school. Now do something about him! Jacqueline slammed her heels on the ground. I know we're not a fucking strip club. Let me go out and talk to him. I better get a bigger cut in tips this morning. Elaine let out an exasperated cry, threw her hands in the air in defeat, and brushed past Jacqueline. Behind her, she could hear both Christine and Jacqueline yell, "Finally!" Elaine went to the main floor and walked up to Old Man Chu. She bowed and greeted him in Vietnamese, as it was expected of her to greet her elders with respect, even though the man was creepier than a dark alleyway at night. She picked up a napkin to wipe the drool from his mouth. I think it's time you head home. I'll call your caretaker to come pick you up. He waved her off and dodged the napkin. He muttered to Elaine to bring Jacqueline back out and pointed at his empty glass. He asked for a glass of Heineken, and Elaine gave her best customer service smile, the same smile she'd been using since she was 6 years old, working at the nail salons with her mother. Xin lỗi, du? Elaine apologized and flashed him the smile again, like she had fish hooks on each side of her mouth. It never hurts to get the most tips out of any man, especially ones who are at death's door. You've been a loyal customer for over 6 years. You know the rules. We don't serve alcohol here. We only serve coffee. How about I get you a café soda? But you have to promise not to harass Jacqueline again, okay? And please, tip her well this time. Old Man Chu slobbered some more, gave her a stink eye, and eventually took out his wallet. Satisfied, Elaine motioned toward another bikini barista to replace his coffee. She sighed and slinked down into a chair. She was getting too old for this. How long could she keep being an ABG in the OC for? She thought about how differently her life could have turned out had she just finished college and read more books. She could have been like one of her snobby cousins who worked in tech, medicine, or started their own businesses. Maybe she could have been something more. Elaine grew envious of another life as she scanned the dark coffee shop, watching bored women dangle their bodies over tables or drape themselves in velvet chairs, vaping while on their phones. Maybe this was all there was. A chuckle came from the corner, and she turned her head to see another one of her repeat customers eyeing her from the back table. Once their eyes met, she tried to stifle a laugh. A smile instantly crossed her face. She got up and headed toward the corner table. She didn't know names. She only knew faces. And she knew this face particularly well. His slicked jet black hair, crisp white button-down shirt, and his gleaming gold Rolex was comforting to her, and a warm welcome on a Monday morning. He was at least consistent, a rare attribute in the men she usually pursued. Elaine had a crush, more than a crush. She especially would never admit it to Christine, who would make fun of her till the day she died, cackling in her face that this man was the embodiment of an Asian fuckboy and a basic Kevin Nguyen type. "Back again so soon, Chow Mo Wan?" she asked, sliding into the booth next to him. She decided to nickname him after the character in The Mood for Love, because he looked a lot like a young Tony Leung. And a young Tony Leung was everything. The man almost spat out his coffee as he laughed. "You need to stop calling me that." "Well, you're never going to tell me your real name, so..."
"You're right about that."
"Who are you here for this morning? Jacqueline? Sylvia? Tammy? Pick your poison. You've memorized everyone's schedule by now." He shrugged.
"Doesn't matter to me. I really just am here for the coffee."
"You know, you should think about seeing a therapist. You might have mommy issues." The man chuckled.
"I don't need a therapist to tell me that I have commitment issues."
"Then go to a Starbucks." The man lifted his coffee cup to toast Elaine.
"I prefer to support small businesses in my community."
"Idiot." She clucked her tongue at him, but she wore a small smile. She hated that she loved unattainable men. It was purely the chase for her. Elaine's phone vibrated, and she pulled it out to see a text message from her cousin, Tao, who is currently living in Saigon. Tao was notoriously difficult to get in touch with. She had no active social media accounts and wasn't in consistent touch with anyone in the family, including her own sisters. Her response time varied depending on her partying schedule.
"Sorry, can't help. Also, I don't do things like that anyways. Seems illegal?"
Elaine scowled. Oh, how she hated the Nguyen women. All three of them. Priscilla, Tui, and Tao. She saw them all as white chasers who conveniently forgot about their roots. It was a far cry from when they all lived together in that little house in Santa Ana, packed in like sardines. She rolled her eyes and muttered "bitch" under her breath, loud enough for the man next to her to hear. "Of course it's illegal. It usually is." Tao pretended that she was above their hustle, above all of this jungle Asian nonsense, because she went to school in Boston. But somewhere, secretly, Elaine still kept hope that she would remember how they all used to huddle under the orange tree in Santa Ana, dreaming about a better life together. They all made the pact that they wouldn't be like their mothers when they grew up. This generation, it would be different. Now she was the one left behind, the only one still working the family businesses and doing back-alley favors and deals for those in Little Saigon.
"Something the matter?" the man asked her.
His eyes curiously examined everything on her face, from her false eyelashes to the dark shade of red lipstick from the celebrity makeup line she sported. Elaine felt her cheeks flush ever so slightly, but she played it cool, like she always did when it came to handsome, unattainable men.
"Sorry, Vietnamese things. You know how it is. My uptight, pompous cousin thinks she's too good to help out on a favor." "Well, what's the issue? Maybe I can help."
Elaine laughed. "I can't tell you. It's a stupid favor for my mother."
"I know a thing or two about stupid favors for Asian mothers."
"All right, fine."
"I need a woman," Elaine began. "Don't we all?" he interrupted. "I need a woman who is willing to marry this guy that's coming from Vietnam. He'll be here within the month. He's an uncle of a close family friend. One of my mother's other line of businesses that's off the books. I thought my cousin could help by talking to some people we know in Vietnam who have single aunties over here, who need the cash," Elaine said, raising an eyebrow at him, as if expecting him to understand where she was going with this. "You know, I need a woman."
"I see," the man said, as he leaned back in the booth. He was quiet for a moment, and Elaine could tell he was combing through the Rolodex in his mind. It oddly turned her on, watching him try to help the village out. She hadn't met a useful man in years, especially not the Kevin Nguyen types from San Jose. These types of deadbeat men reminded her of her father's generation, and every other man she'd witnessed growing up, where they'd punt everything to the women in the family to take care of while they drank their beers, smoked their cigarettes, and came into coffee shops like the ones she owned. "What's his age?" he asked. "Roughly late 60s, maybe early 70s. How much in exchange and for how long?" "The family is willing to pay $50,000 for a legal marriage of 5 years."
"Seems a bit low for 5 years."
"That's all they have. $10,000 for each year. They've been trying to get him into America for a long time. This is the last shot they have."
"Any preference? Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean, Cambodian?"
Elaine shook her head. "Has to be Vietnamese, you know, to pass the tests. A language barrier wouldn't be a good look to prove that they're in love." The man scratched his head and laughed.
"As fate would have it, I actually might know a woman. This woman I've been kind of saying, her mother sounds like a real divorced nutcase. Sounds like she could use the money, and the distraction too. She'd probably love the money aspect more."
Elaine tried to hide her grimace at the mention of him seeing someone.
"Oh, I didn't realize you had a girlfriend. Does she know of your taste in coffee?"
He shrugged.
"I wouldn't call her my girlfriend. It's not serious. You know me. It's never serious. She is nice, though. A good distraction from it all. Being a functioning adult."
He reached into his pockets, dug out his wallet, pulled out his business card, and slipped it across the table to Elaine.
"Now you finally get to know my real name. And it's not Chow Mo Wan. Sorry to disappoint. Call me, and let's set them up. Do I get a cut in this deal?"
"The only cut you'll get is free coffee," Elaine laughed. She picked up the business card and caressed his name under the dim light, running her finger over it again and again.
"It's nice to finally meet you, Daniel Lay."
14. Christine Lum and Rosie Leung. Christine Lum dreamt about putting everything she owned into her beat-up hatchback Toyota and driving all the way up the coast. She used to turn her car onto the ramp heading toward I-5 North, but would exit the minute she hit the Los Angeles County line, because she knew her mother would never allow her to leave Orange County. She had the same car for nearly a decade, after her mother had forced her to buy a practical car, convinced of the longevity of anything made by the Japanese. Her mother would say anyone who placed their faith in anything made by the Vietnamese was a fool, as Christine would look down at her own Vietnamese hands, whose nails were elongated by black acrylics. She wondered if she'd ever be good at anything, aside from being the daughter of a woman who owned a chain of nail salons and questionable bikini coffee shops. After Christine left the coffee shop that her sister Elaine managed, she hit up her half-cousin, Rosie Leung, to see what she was up to, and if she'd be down to smoke a joint near the Santa Ana River. Christine had an affinity for rivers. It was profoundly comforting to know you have no agency in where the stream carried you, that there were truly things out of your control. She knew what it was like to be forever trapped in your own reality and have no say in how to alter it. Her phone lit up, and she saw that Rosie hit her back with a text that said, "Fuck yeah, need to escape. My mom is on my shit again." Christine did a U-turn and headed to Santa Ana, which was in the opposite direction. Despite the estrangement and the feud between their mothers, the two half-cousins were actually friends. They were the youngest in their families, and that meant nobody paid them any attention or cared about their opinion, which was the only loophole they could find in an otherwise very controlled existence. As Christine passed through Bolsa Avenue, familiar Vietnamese cultural touches at almost every home dawned followed her in the rearview mirror, and it felt suffocating, seeing it day in and day out. Each home had their standard foo dogs, dragons, or stone Buddha statues staring out, hidden among bushes of basil plants and lime trees, among the seemingly unified neighborhood where Vietnamese families had resettled after the war, the dichotomy between bitterness and pride showed itself. One home she passed had the old Vietnamese flag next to the American flag, loudly flying in the wind. Christine had seen this flag throughout her childhood, littered throughout lackadaisical graffiti across Little Saigon by spirited young teens, or painted on the walls of old-school pho shops that had been around since the 70s. The yellow background with three red stripes, each symbolizing the north, central, and south parts of Vietnam, was a constant reminder of the reason she had been born in America instead of Vietnam. On the other side of the street, a warring home had the new flag of Vietnam waving back angrily, a red background with a yellow star in the middle, which represented the Socialist Republic. Even as Christine drove past the two homes, she didn't feel anything about either of them, because she knew it didn't matter what she thought. It only mattered when some white guy pontificated about why America lost the Vietnam War in the opinion section of some fancy newspaper. She was tired of hearing about it from them, her parents, and every opinionated elderly person on her block. She just wanted to smoke weed and figure out her life. As soon as Christine pulled into Rosie's cul-de-sac, she drove to the end of the street and parked in front of a blue, crooked house and sent her an arrival text. Rosie came running out of the home and climbed into the passenger seat, immediately pulling down the side mirror flap and began applying her lipstick. She fluffed her hair out and pried away the purple highlights stuck to her lip gloss. "Sup, boo? How are you?" Rosie asked, sucking through her teeth as she carefully applied a new coat of gloss over the lipstick. "How was work?" "Same old shit," Christine said. "Same shit every day in this shit place." "Jesus, sorry I asked. What's up with your attitude today?"
"Sorry, just sick of Orange County sometimes."
"Who isn't? I get so jealous of my sister, living in Seattle, traveling the world, doing research for a PhD program. I'm the dumb one who couldn't escape," Rosie said as she smacked her lips loudly several times, ensuring the gloss was evenly distributed. "But then, I think about what a little robot she is, clacking away at her keyboard, and I'm like, nah, fuck that."
"At least your mother encourages you to leave. My mother would have her claws in me if I even tried to move a few feet away from her," Christine said as she handed Rosie a joint. "I can't even move to Los Angeles. Los Angeles! That shit is only an hour away, and yet it's further away than Paris to me."
"Shit's always greener on the other side." Rosie inhaled deeply, coughing sporadically on the exhale. "Trust me, all these other tryhards in our family getting their PhDs, running startups, going to med school, graduating college at 19, or that one cousin who thinks she's international now or some shit because she lives in Saigon, that shit is all social media fake and just a distraction from their real problems. Do you think any of the women in our family are actually happy? Look at the disarray. No one talks to each other. They all blame my mother blames all of them. And honestly, no one actually gets what they want at the end of the day. All they do is blame some family curse. But the only curse I see here is self-inflicted. Because everyone keeps making the same damn mistakes over and over again."
"God damn, girl," Christine whistled. "That was heavy. Since when did you become Asian Oprah?"
Rosie shrugged. "The key is to stop giving a fuck because nothing ever changes. So why bother?" Christine didn't say anything. She just cranked up the stereo, rolled down her windows, and began blasting music as they cruised toward the Santa Ana River. The two laughing Buddha bobbleheads stuck on her dashboard, which her mother had given her for protection when she first got the car, began shaking their golden heads, side to side, up and down, seemingly laughing in her face. Christine ignored the Buddhas and pretended that she was the main character in her own story, because that was the only way she could get through the stifling days. Rosie stuck her head out the car window as her half-cousin Christine drove down the 405. Rosie, like a dog desperate to feel the rush of wind against her cheeks, stuck her head even further out, despite the annoyed honks from the surrounding cars. She loved feeling the opposite of something. It fueled her rebellious nature. She was the daughter her mother couldn't control or figure out. The sun hit her face at the right moment, and she soaked it in as much as she could before she reluctantly brought her head back inside the car. Christine passed her the joint as she swerved the car, trying to find the right song to play. Rosie took another hit, trying to erase the fight she had with her mother right before she got picked up. Her mother's bitterness flowed through her, and she closed her eyes, allowing her mother's ugly words to rear again. "You waste your time chasing boys who don't want you," her mother said, lecturing her as she followed Rosie around, who was rushing to get ready and trying on several different outfits. "Can't you be more like your sister Lily?" "Why would I want to become her? Lily doesn't even know how to feel or notice anything around her," Rosie yelled back. "She literally doesn't even know what's going on half the time. At least she's doing something with her life. You're not going to amount to anything if you sit around all day, smoking weed with your deadbeat friends." "Don't project your shit onto me. I know you got some heavy family drama going on or whatever, but it's not my fault you were the most gossiped about woman in Little Saigon, and all those aunties hated your ass for years. Don't pretend you're all kumbaya now just because Ba died and now you're pretending to be a martyr and everything is fine with the aunties." Her mother threw her hands up and called her a D and Gongui for wearing her makeup and hair like that. "You're breaking my heart, Rosie," her mother pleaded with her. She gestured wildly toward everything in the home, at everything inside Rosie's room, and at her outfit. "All of this? All that you see in this house that has kept you warm for 21 years? All of that drama and fighting? I did it for you, to house you and your sister. We had nothing back then. We came here with nothing. Of course I took this damn house back then, and I'd do it all over again too. I went through all that pain and loss to make sure your life could be together in the future." "My life is together," Rosie screamed. "Just because it's not your idea of what a life is, doesn't mean it's not a good life. What are you going to do to make money? Become a hooker? Sell drugs?" Rosie stared at her mother like she had lost her mind. She didn't say anything back. Her phone vibrated. Christine had arrived. "Forget it. You think I'm always the dramatic one? Look in the mirror. You think some wood, nails, and concrete makes this place a home? No, Matt. You got us a prison cell." She turned and ran out of the house, slamming the door behind her. When the weed finally hit her, Rosie opened her eyes back up. Her mother's words evaporated instantly, and she smiled. "Why don't we move to Los Angeles? Together?" Rosie asked. Christine laughed. "Yeah, right. Our mothers would kill us. Seriously, why not? We both have money saved up. We can get a cute apartment together. Figure out what we want to do with our lives. Get some plants, vintage furniture, maybe even a goddamn cat. You know, like how the white girls do it." Christine grew quiet. "You're serious? Why not? We can finally be two little fishes in a big-ass pond. Let's get the fuck out of Little Saigon." A smile broke out on Christine's face as the idea began to take root in her mind, even though she knew that realistically, neither of them would move. It was still nice to pretend. "Fuck it. I'm in. Let's do it." She honked several times, and the two girls screamed in the car. As they hit a red light, the car next to them rolled down their window, and a white guy with dreadlocks yelled out, "Ni hao, ladies!" Christine and Rosie turned toward him, and in sync, they showed him their middle fingers. "It's jiao, bitch, not ni hao." The minute the light turned green, Christine floored it. The two girls cackled loudly. and Rosie stuck her head out the window again and blew out more smoke. The pregnancy. 15. Priscilla Nguyen. Breaches are slow, steady, and the effects won't be felt until long after the culprit is gone. A good breach comes in undetected, slowly stealing data from under your nose. You'd never see it coming. Not until it's laughing in your face. Maggie Chen was a good breach. She came in sneakily, deliberate, and carried a virus that would infect Priscilla's mind and slowly corrupt her system. Priscilla kept up the charade for as long as possible with Mark. It had been months since she discovered those texts from Maggie Chen on his phone. Ironically, she was terrified every day that Mark would know she saw them. She talked back less and apologized more, hoping that he would wake up one day and remember the way he used to look at her. And maybe, just maybe, she could salvage this. Priscilla surprised Mark by taking him to her favorite hole-in-the-wall Vietnamese restaurant on Jackson Street. She pasted on a fake chipper smile, hoping to trick Mark into thinking she was still cool, spontaneous, and exuberant. As soon as they entered the restaurant, the hostess smiled at her. And much to Mark's surprise, Priscilla spoke to the woman in Vietnamese and asked for a table for two. "You rarely speak Vietnamese," he said, raising an eyebrow. "Trying to impress me?" Priscilla gave off a fake laugh, and she used the moment to test the waters between them. She dipped a toe in. "Just trying to brush up on it. I don't want to lose it. Wouldn't you want to teach our kids how to speak Vietnamese?" Mark didn't confirm anything. Instead, he ordered a Bia Saigon for himself, and Priscilla quickly asked for one as well, even though she hated beer. Mark crossed his arms, leaned forward on the table, and stared at the television in the corner, which was blaring Vietnamese music videos. "God, I love Vietnam. There is nothing more freeing than being on the back of a motorbike, traveling up and down the coast. You remember that story of when I almost died?" Mark said. Priscilla nodded. Mark pulled back his sleeve and showed her the same scar on his elbow that she'd seen at every dinner party, where he would tell the same story about how he almost got thrown off his motorbike in central Vietnam. "You know, I don't know why everyone loves the South so much. I actually prefer the North," Mark said. "So many secret alleyways that line the old quarter in Hanoi. You've never been to the North, right?" Priscilla gritted her teeth. "I've only ever been to the South. You know that already, sweetie." "You're missing out, Pris. You need to go back. See it through my eyes." Priscilla saw another opening, and this time allowed herself to step into the water. "You're going back to China soon, aren't you? For work?" Mark's eyes lit up. "Yes, I can't wait. Maybe I'll make a pit stop somewhere. It's been a while since I've been in Southeast Asia. You know how much that place means to me. I really found myself there." Priscilla paused. The water felt a little cool, but it wasn't uninviting. Now that she was standing in shallow water, she felt confident to take another full step into deeper territory. "Well, maybe I can join you for part of your work trip? You can go to Beijing for work, and I'll head to Hong Kong for fun. We can meet in Vietnam. I can finally put my language skills to good use, and you can show me the North." Mark opened his mouth and closed it. Priscilla could see a thought bubble with ellipses hanging above his head. He started to say something, but then the waitress came back out, placing two beers in front of them. Mark turned away from Priscilla and asked the waitress which part of Vietnam she was from. Priscilla braced herself for another long conversation with another Asian waitress. The woman told him she was from the North, and Mark was delighted. He gave Priscilla an "I told you so" look and launched into a conversation about how special the North was. Mark plunged into a deep soliloquy about how striking Ha Long Bay is seeing it for the first time, how the branches from banyan trees would dangle several feet from the ground, lining the alleyways that surrounded the coffee shops, and how his favorite activity was people watching on red plastic stools. Priscilla's face grew a deep red as she felt herself being left further and further out of the conversation. She instantly regretted speaking Vietnamese earlier. The rare occasion that she spoke it, it always backfired. The waitress pulled up a chair at Mark's behest, and she laughed at his story about how he managed to skirt the infamous midnight curfew by knowing which bars to hide out in. The conversation turned political, as they talked about how corrupt certain parts of the North still were, how business owners would line the pockets of local police, and how, because of that, Chicken Feet Street was still a raucous party at 1 a.m. Priscilla quietly sipped on her beer, wondering if she should talk about her experience going back as a Vietnamese-American woman, but nobody gave her an opening, so she retreated into herself. Yet Priscilla kept waiting, waiting and waiting, like a good dog. She was waiting for Mark to remember the reason they were each other's emergency contacts, to remember why they had spent Christmas alone that one year instead of with their families, to remember why she held his hand after his sister was taken to the emergency room after a car accident, and to remember why he held hers whenever she cried about her mother. Breaches happen because of human error. This particular breach happened at 2 a.m. Priscilla was startled awake by the buzzing sound of Mark's phone next to her head. They were both naked and sticky in bed after sex. Mark had fallen asleep with his arm wrapped around her waist and left his phone peeking out from under his pillow. She grumped an annoyance at him and reached for his phone to silence it. That's when she saw a string of messages from Maggie. "Can we stay at the same hotel for the China trip? Everyone is like so coupled up. Bringing their partner for a work trip? Who does that? Glad you're not boring like everyone else and have a girlfriend. Let's get drunk. Smiley emoticon. Want to go with me to Singapore after? Or Vietnam? Smiley emoticon." Maggie had no idea who Priscilla was, and this revelation gutted, haunted, crushed her. Maggie didn't even know she existed. But Maggie had existed in Priscilla's mind for months. In fact, she had built her up and up and up as the perfect Asian woman. Younger, uncomplicated, free. Priscilla had done everything she could to become a better version of Maggie for Mark, and the girl didn't even know who she fucking was. This was the precise moment Priscilla snapped. All Priscilla could remember from that night was the banshee scream that erupted from her. Her Southern California Asian accent came out in full force. It was the type of screaming she remembered her mother doing to her father for years. It was the type of screaming that was reminiscent of her mother's warning shrieks to never marry a Vietnamese man because they were ngu dốt. It was the type of screaming that caused 10-year-old Priscilla to cover her ears and desperately wish they were Japanese or Chinese instead of being Vietnamese, the normal Asians. "Do you have feelings for Maggie?" Priscilla paced back and forth, still naked, tearing her thick black hair out. Tears streamed down her face. "Jesus, no! Of course not! Can you please stop being so insecure and jealous?" Mark said, staring at the clock, watching it turn 4 a.m. He groaned and slammed a pillow into his face, his post-coital shrunken dick shriveling in the moonlight. "I have a big presentation in the morning to prepare for the China trip. I cannot believe you're doing this to me right now. Show me your phone. I want to see every conversation you two have had." "No, you're supposed to trust me." "I do trust you. Just show me your phone. You can look at mine all you want." "You know, Priscilla, my Thai ex-girlfriend never talked back to me like you do." "Well, why didn't you fucking get married to her instead?" "Because I didn't want to pay the goddamn sin sod, okay? That shit is so archaic." "What the hell is a sin sod?" Priscilla shouted, so confused. "I'm not fucking Thai. You can't just throw words out like that for no reason and expect me to know. It's like their version of a Thai dowry. I don't know the rules." Mark yelled back, running his hands through his hair. "The groom has to give the family of the bride money or something. I don't fucking know." Priscilla stopped in her tracks and stared at Mark like he was a stranger. Who was the man she'd been with the past 3 years? Her voice shook. You're telling me that you were with your Thai girlfriend for 3 years, but you didn't want to marry her because of a dowry? Why are we talking about this now? Who the fuck cares? Mark yelled, throwing his hands in the air. That was a lifetime ago. I was young. We've all moved on from it. Do you not realize how problematic everything you just said was? You let that girl on for years. Just like how you're leading me on right now. Priscilla was incredulous as she tried her best to hold back her tears and keep a steady poker face. The breach had finally reached her heart, and she was malfunctioning. What happened to the man I fell in love with and who fell in love with me? I thought we knew each other. You're the only person who I can turn to. You're my family, Mark. I have no one left. Mark began breathing heavily and hyperventilating. I thought I was capable of being that person for you, Priscilla, but clearly I am not. You made me be your boyfriend and your best friend and your mother and your father and your sisters. Every fucking person in this goddamn world. Who can live up to that kind of expectation? I am not your whole universe, Priscilla. No one can be that for you. Priscilla faltered. It was as if Mark had slapped her across the face. She knew she should have taken a step back at this point, taken a breather, gone on a walk, and cooled off. But she was tired of retreating. She'd been retreating her entire life. Go on, then. Fucking leave. Find yourself another Asian girlfriend like you always do. I'm just one in billions of Asian women out there. She launched a pillow at his face. God damn it, Priscilla. You make everything so fucking difficult. Who the hell would ever want to be chained to you, your family shitshow, and your insane mother? Who would willingly ever marry into that? Mark grabbed the pillow she had just thrown at him and his phone. He shoved past her and slammed the bedroom door, throwing one last expletive at her before the door drowned out his voice. She could hear his muffled yelling from the living room. Fuck this, Priscilla. I don't need this from you or anyone. I'll get my things tomorrow, then I'm off to Asia for work. We're done here. Priscilla stopped dead in her tracks, unable to breathe. How could she let herself go off like that? She'd been so careful, calculated in not pissing Mark off ever since she found out about Maggie. Now she was alone in her bedroom at 4 a.m., and Mark wasn't ever going to come back to the room to hug her, kiss her, say sorry, or say the words she wanted to hear in that moment. I love you. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make this work. She sank to the floor, naked and sobbing, wondering why she just couldn't shut the fuck up when she saw those messages. She hated it when her mother would yell at her father, and here she was, becoming the one thing she had worked her whole life not to become. Maggie Chen was never the breach. It was always Priscilla. Mark loved Asian women. If only she could have loved herself just as much. Maybe if she did, she wouldn't have found herself one night, broken-hearted and alone in a half-empty apartment, re-downloading Tinder and mindlessly swiping from profile to profile, wondering if she was too broken and tired to swipe left on all the white men, or if she simply was too lonely not to. So she swiped right on every profile, no matter who it was. It was all just a numbers game anyway. She kept swiping right on all the engineers who worked at Amazon, all the biotech people, all the recent transplants from San Francisco who came to join the latest startup or become a director at a big tech, all the amateur rock climbers, all the new PhD candidates who flocked to the city. She swiped right on all of them. She kept going and going, hearing the chime of, "It's a match," go off, using it as a band-aid. The more she heard it go off, one after the other, a series of notifications filling her inbox, the more she got off on it. She answered all the messages, one by one, hoping to find someone, anyone, who could help her break the curse. Priscilla's frontal lobe kicked in, and it didn't allow her to wallow for too long. She set out to optimize her chances at finding a life partner immediately after the breakup. She lined men up every night of the week, scheduling some nights back to back. For the more questionable ones, she did a series of video chats to screen them. Maximum results with minimum efforts. She realized if she followed a strict rotational method with a high turnover rate, she would increase her odds of finding love. But after 3 dates, she began to see a pattern with the single men in Seattle. The data was all there. Men who questioned her credentials. Men who felt threatened and insecure with her career. Men who dangled the promise of marriage and children one day, but didn't actually mean it. Men who were obsessed with their package. Not that kind of package. Their total compensation tech package, which included base salary and the number of stocks they were given. Men who paraded around as nice guys, but secretly harbored incel thoughts. Priscilla's thoughts took a dark turn as she kept rehashing Mark, Maggie Chen, and everything that had led her to this moment. She was spiraling, and she wasn't sure how to pull herself out of it. But she continued to go on dates and woke up next to strangers every morning because she was too afraid to go back to an empty apartment. "Are you okay?" Lily Leung asked Priscilla tentatively one morning when she saw Priscilla stumble into the office's shared kitchen, sunglasses on, and wearing a wrinkled shirt. Lily looked like she'd come straight off a morning workout. Her skin was glowing, and her hair was pulled back in a sleek, high ponytail. Priscilla looked around to see who was speaking to her. When she saw it was her half-cousin, also the intern, she flinched from how healthy Lily appeared in comparison to her, and she vacillated between being awkward or professional. "Hey, Lily," she said, clearing her throat and putting on a serious voice. "How are you settling in? How's your internship going? How's your research project going?" Lily also straightened herself and matched Priscilla's professionalism. "It's great so far. Just experimenting with a new data model this week, hoping for some good results." "Great, great." Priscilla trailed off, trying to find some commonality with her estranged half-cousin. "Did you end up going to the funeral? For Beng Wai?" Lily shook her head. "I should have, but I was too busy here. And to be honest, I stopped talking to her a while ago since I moved up here from my PhD program. My mother was pretty upset I didn't make the effort." "Did you go? Did you know her well?" Priscilla had an image of her grandmother covering her ears when she was young, while her parents were fighting in the kitchen. She had rocked her back and forth, trying her best to distract her. "No," she said, her smile thinning with regret. "I didn't go. I was also pretty busy." Their only commonality, it seemed, was that they were both terrible firstborn daughters. "Was your mother also upset that you didn't show up?" Priscilla quickly grabbed a bagel from the counter and held it up to her face. "Sorry, lots of meetings today. Let's chat later, okay? Keep up the great work. Great having you here." She quickly retreated into the privacy of her executive office, grateful that she had banned an open floor office plan when she first started her company. The last thing Priscilla needed to admit was that on top of the breakup, on top of her securing $15 million in VC funding for the latest round, on top of regularly stalking Maggie Chen's social media, on top of all the marathon dating she'd been doing, she never actually returned her mother's call all those months ago. Priscilla woke up one day and realized that she was late. Very, very late. She threw off her duvet, ran out the door in her bedroom slippers, and sprinted to the nearest drugstore. Priscilla looked rabid as she grabbed a pregnancy test from the counter and quickly went back home. She rushed into the bathroom and administered the test. Waiting for the results, she slowly sank down to the floor and rocked back and forth, saying a prayer for the first time since she was forced to go to a Buddhist camp as a kid. There was no such thing as God, Buddha, or whatever was out there. But in this moment, it didn't hurt to believe. Just a little. When she finally had the courage to look up, she saw two little lines appear, and she burst into tears. She reached for her phone and scrolled through, wondering who was her emergency contact now. She instinctively scrolled to Mark's number, which was next to her mother's number. She kept pulling the screen indecisively up and down before scrolling to her sister, Twee. But something was holding her back. She then scrolled to her youngest sister, Tao. But she wasn't there for long before she scrolled back up to Mark's number. She stared and stared at his number, willing it to ring. Her eyes kept darting back to her mother's number. She never thought she'd ever need her mother again, especially not after their fight last year. But at this moment, she didn't need an ex-boyfriend. She needed her mother. Her hand hovered over the call button, shaking, wondering what was scarier, pregnancy, motherhood, or speaking to her mother. Priscilla caressed her stomach, wondering if she was prepared to make the kinds of sacrifices needed to go through with this, and if she'd be different than her mother. She looked down at the little stick in her hand and decided she was done running away from the kind of woman she had dreamt of becoming her whole life, because now she had to be better for whoever was growing inside of her. She hit the dial button. The first ring had barely finished when her mother picked up. Priscilla's eyes welled up, and she tried to keep her voice calm, but she broke out into tears instantly after hearing her mother's voice after more than a year of silence. "Matt, are you there?" She tried her best not to cry over the phone.
"Gone. Is everything okay?"
Mai Nguyen asked, her voice frantic with concern, as if the year of silence between the two never happened.
"What's wrong? What do you need? Are you okay?"
"No, I'm not okay. Can I please come home? I need you." That was what Priscilla wanted to say. She felt it on the tip of her tongue, like a plane waiting for the clear to finally descend. The words circled above her. From all corners of the world, and across time and space, ghosts, spirits, witches, and her ancestors waited with bated breath for Priscilla to finally open up to her mother. They waited and waited for their union to be fixed, because they'd also carried regrets from their own fractured relationships with their mothers. But just like last time, Priscilla swallowed her words. She couldn't break the barrier. Not this time. Whether it was pride or fear, she didn't know what was stopping her. Just like how she spoke to Lily earlier, she retained the same professionalism with her mother. Priscilla cleared her throat, kept an even tone in her voice, and wiped the tears from her eyes.
"Yes, Matt. Everything's fine. Just calling about some paperwork."
16. Lily Leung. Lily Leung spent her entire life chasing third chances. Her mother, Mrs. Kim Leung, however, was convinced in the power of second chances, believing that there were karmic rewards from your previous life. Her mother had often said that the most pivotal moment in her life was when a house deed was serendipitously signed in Santa Ana. Once it went on public record, it revealed a signature that belonged to a Mrs. Lee Ming-Zung, which triggered the private investigator who Mrs. Leung had hired. A second chance had unfolded. Her mother waited years to take that chance, saving every scrap for a one-way ticket to America. And she followed the trail to California, to an address that led them to a crooked blue house in Santa Ana, and into the arms of a mother she thought had been lost forever. But Lily knew that second chances were only there to fix mistakes made from the first go-around. It was short-sighted. The real magic was in the third chance, otherwise known as the third design system. It was the chance to get everything right from both the first and second attempt. The third design system had the best chance for true success. When Lily was asked if she wanted to go to Hong Kong by herself for a last-minute research trip, she said yes right away. Priscilla had unexpectedly taken a long leave of absence, and then the principal engineer went on maternity leave, leaving the spot open. The request trickled all the way down the company until it landed on the intern's desk. Lily recognized the pattern of three in this request, and that the universe was aligning for her. Because she knew that Peter, her first real relationship, was still in Hong Kong. She'd been unable to solve the mathematical proof for the what-if between them for years. Their first attempt failed. Their second attempt failed. And now, she had a shot at a third chance. This time, it could be successful. It could be different. Lily had hope. After some research on which neighborhood to stay in, Lily booked an Airbnb at the very top of 100 Queens Road Central, the last stop off the half-mile central mid-level escalator running right through the bustling Central District in Hong Kong, hidden between beautiful alleyways with overgrown cascading vines. The central mid-level escalator was known for being the longest outside escalator system in the world, a surreal, dystopian ride crammed with locals, expats, and finance guys in Armani suits yelling into their phones, Filipina nannies running errands for wealthy Hong Kongese families, and tourists with their long-range DSLRs. No matter their economic status, they would all ride side by side, up and down, past modern shops nestled next to more traditional mom-and-pop stalls, a mix of old and new, young and old, rich and poor. Modern boba lattes selling next to stalls hawking herbal teas in paper cups. The cheapest Michelin restaurants next to the most expensive Michelin restaurants. Riding the escalators was like watching a moving, living documentary about Hong Kong culture. It was a thrilling spectacle and testament of Hong Kongese resilience in the modern age, and Lily couldn't wait to witness it with Peter. The romantic in Lily envisioned that their reunion would be as grandiose as red carpet premieres, kissing in the rain, running through an airport terminal. Because third chances deserved that. As soon as Lily stepped onto the tarmac, she choked on the tangible mugginess. She wasn't used to this weather anymore, since she left Vietnam as a very small child. But it wasn't the weather that she needed to get used to again. It was the fact that nobody had batted an eye at her the whole trip. She received no double takes, no eye lingering a bit longer on her features, nobody asking her, "Where are you from?" or "Are you Japanese?" or the staple "Ni hao" thrown at her. She was invisible. For once in her life, she blended in. The peace was resoundingly profound. Once she walked out the terminal gate, she heard her name being called, and she looked up excitedly to see Peter run toward her, his brunette hair perfectly coiffed for the occasion, and his brown eyes beaming. He looked more at ease in Hong Kong than Lily had ever seen before, especially since she knew he often wrestled with his Chinese identity compared to his white side. Peter looked heartbreakingly handsome, and Lily felt herself melting as he scooped her up into his arms and swung her around. Her insecurities quickly escalated, along with her anxiety, as she remembered all the times he'd broken her heart. He was so worldly, and Lily felt sheltered and ignorant in comparison. "It's so good to see you," he said as he buried his face into Lily's hair. He gave her the kind of comforting hug that only two people with a labyrinth of a past can do. "I'm sorry, I bet I smell like an old sock," Lily groaned and laughed nervously as she attempted to smooth the wrinkles in her clothes out. "The flight was brutal. It's wild to be back in Asia again, but even more wild to see you again." "At least you're a very cute smelly sock," he laughed. "I cannot wait to show you around Hong Kong." Peter grabbed her bags from her as he confidently led them to the MTR to take it back to the city. He lightly joked that she had packed an entire department store for just a week's work trip. With his free hand, he reached behind her neck, twisting the ends of her hair with his fingers, just like he used to, and Lily shivered at his touch. His hand dropped from her neck and found her hand, and he held it all the way through the metro station. She did her best not to react to it. Internally, she was screaming with joy. This wasn't just her third chance. It was theirs. Lily was in awe. After the initial culture shock she felt at the airport wore off, she couldn't not soak it all up. So this is Hong Kong. This was what Peter was so obsessed with. The reason why their second chance had crumbled. He had chosen Hong Kong instead of her. It was wonderful, mysterious, and chaotic, and an intense sensory overload. Lily started taking photos and selfies of everything inside the MTR, the underground metro city of Hong Kong, that seemed to be the city's secret Atlantis. She began to imagine what her life would have been like had she followed Peter to Hong Kong, instead of going into her PhD program. She thought of her mother as she wandered through the MTR. Lily's mother had refused to talk about all the years she spent orphaned in Vietnam, thinking she'd been purposely abandoned, too afraid to move forward on her own, and spending every waking moment believing she wasn't worthy of her mother's love. "You can't rely on anyone else for your own happiness, Lily," her mother used to say to her. "You need to find it for yourself, because anyone can leave at any given moment, even the ones you think will never hurt you." Lily snuck a glance at Peter. Doubt began to creep in, as she wondered if she could ever rely on him to not leave her again. But she dismissed it. Everything about Hong Kong was a juxtaposition. The retro, soft colors next to modern, vibrant colors. The women were elegant and gorgeous, and the men, rugged and painfully handsome. She was in awe of the thriving shops, restaurants, and bars inside a metro station. Peter was amused by Lily's innocence and commented on it several times as her bright eyes widened to a new city in a new part of the world. After an hour traveling through the MTR to get to the central mid-level escalator, Lily's doe eyes hadn't relented, but she could feel Peter's excitement begin to wane. "Is something wrong?" Lily asked. "Is it weird to see me here?" "It's weird, isn't it? I'm going to say it's weird. Or am I being an annoying tourist?" Peter touched her knee reassuringly and shushed her. "Stop. Everything's fine. I'm just tired. I stayed up late to finish this work thing." "I really am glad to see you, Lils. What are the chances you get sent here for work?"
"I think it's a sign."
The next stop was theirs. He tapped her knee gently, indicating that it was time to get off, and automatically grabbed her two suitcases to carry for her. He made a joke that suddenly her packing habits weren't as cute as they'd been an hour ago. Lily flinched a bit, remembering that Peter's jokes always had a kernel of judgment to them, and she remembered how they stopped being funny one day and began to hurt. She brushed it off and tried to grab a suitcase to help, but he protested and insisted on carrying them both still. As they exited the station, Lily's eyes brightened as she soaked it all in again. She whipped her phone out, ready to take a bunch of photos that would just end up crowding her cloud storage and she'd never look at again. As they strolled through the above-ground walkway, they rounded the corner, and Lily gasped. Not from the spectacle of the city, but from the chaotic scene they stumbled upon. Her ears picked up a chorus of Tagalog being spoken all at once, as if each voice was fighting to tell their version, their side of the story, their gossip. For miles and miles, all throughout the rest of the footbridge, there were Filipino women, a crowd of young and old, all gathered in small groups, sitting on folded cardboard to cover the ground, nestled next to the railings, squeezed along the sides so they wouldn't disrupt the footpath. They were all laughing, napping, knitting, chatting, drinking tea, and eating food from Tupperware containers. Locals didn't bat an eye at the scene as they walked through. Only the other tourists, like Lily, were staring, wondering why all these Filipino women were here.
"What are they doing? Are they homeless?" Lily asked. "They don't look homeless."
Peter shrugged. "I don't know. It's normally on Sundays when you see them gathered like this, and they kind of hang out all day."
"You aren't at all curious why all these women are just sitting around in the middle of the day, crowding the pathway? They look like they're waiting for something. But what?"
The researcher in her kicked into high gear. Peter didn't respond. He just silently led the way to the central mid-level escalator. Lily couldn't stop talking about the Filipino women the whole way there. Peter, still didn't say a word. Once they reached the bottom of the escalators, Lily turned to look at Peter, her face full of childlike glee, and switched topics. "Surprise! Our Airbnb is located at the top of these escalators. I did so much research, and I thought it would be cute for us to go up and down them all weekend. It's one of the longest outdoor escalators in the world, almost 3,000 feet up. Can you believe it? I know you live over in Kowloon, but it's kind of nice to play tourist for a weekend, right?" Lily paused as she realized that Peter's face was unreadable. A myriad of thoughts bubbled up. Was she lame? Did Peter actually not want to be here? Was he just here because he was too polite to say no? Is this too touristy? But Peter's face broke out in a laugh, and Lily allowed herself to relax. She recognized the tone of his laughter, and she studied his face, remembering every fold and freckle that dotted his cheekbones. Lily could make a map of the world from them. Suddenly, Peter stopped laughing. His face went from amused to miffed, and she knew him well enough to know when he was trying to bite his tongue. He simply raised his finger and pointed up. Lily followed where he was pointing and craned her neck all the way up, her hand shielding her face from the hot sun. "Lils, I think the escalators are out of order. The sign says it's under construction all week." He raised an eyebrow at her. "Basically, the entire time you're here." A horde of tourists next to them had also discovered the problem at the same time, and grumbles filled the air. Complaints upon complaints about how they were going to get all the way to the top in this morbid heat. One woman began to fan herself with her gigantic paper map of the city and bemoaned about why their honeymoon was in Asia, of all the darn places in the world. Only the locals appeared nonplussed, and they simply walked up the immobile escalators or moved over to the concrete stairs on the right. "Still think it's funny that I'm not a light packer?" Lily laughed nervously. Peter just gave her a thin-lipped grin, picked up both her suitcases silently, and stepped on the first set of stairs. Lily, feeling the mood shift again, just like it did back on the subway, kept silent. By the time they reached the top of the central mid-level, they were both drenched in sweat. Peter had sweated through his breezy white shirt, and the veins in his arms stuck out, like raised typography on his skin. Lily's pristine airport outfit she had picked for their reunion was also soaked through. Their reunion embrace suddenly seemed like it was 10 years ago. They were no longer in the mood to hold hands. Peter set the luggage down on the pavement and was finally able to pull the handles out to use. He rolled them down the alleyway, slightly ahead of Lily, the luggage making a huge racket as it wobbled against the old cobblestoned street. They walked through the cascading, overgrown greenery that Lily saw in the Airbnb posting. She had specifically chosen the location because of how romantic and moody it felt, and she thought it would be the perfect setting to tell Peter that she still loved him.